Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Did you know that St. Louis played a conspicuous role in the women's suffrage movement? Thousands of women gathered and paraded downtown to demonstrate for the right to vote. That was 100 years ago this year and held during the Democratic National Convention here 4 years before women won the right to cast ballots. Now, a century later, a woman is seeking the presidency on a major party ticket for the first time. How much influence did that demonstration have on the suffragist movement? Here to talk about the anniversary and that event are Kathleen Farrell, president of the League of Women Voters of Metro St. Louis. Rebecca Now is a historian and speaker and executive director of the Webster Grove Shrewsbury Area Chamber of Commerce. We've got it all in, Rebecca, all the titles. Thank you both so much for being with us. Kathleen, I'll start with you. I have to confess, this is an episode in our history that I knew nothing about, but it was a big deal, wasn't it?
It was a very big deal. In 1916, the Democrats convened in St. Louis for their national convention to nominate Woodrow Wilson for his second term. You remember he was elected in 1912. Mm-hmm. And this was particularly important as we were going into World War I, sure. And we were talking about being the leader of democracy in the world. So the National Women's Suffrage Group and the Missouri Women's Suffrage Group decided that they would demand attention paid and also ask that women's suffrage be put in the Democratic platform and make the Democrats put their money where their mouth was, so to speak, about women's suffrage. And so they put out a call in May of 1916 and said, women, come from all over the country. We are going to line the 10 blocks outside the convention, and we're going to demand the right to vote. And they did so.
And there were about 3,000 of them here, as I understand it?
Yes. The numbers, you know, different people say different numbers, but about 3,000 came, yes. They lined 10 blocks.
If only there had been television cameras, there would have been a lot
right.
more.
There are wonderful pictures, and you may have seen some of sure. them in the Post-Dispatch and other places. But it was also very, very important because this was the key event that led to the last period of the demand for suffrage. Because then Wilson was there. They eventually put it in the platform. And then women suffragists could demand of Wilson's administration that they honor that. And you do remember, you know, the Iron Jaw Angels and other popular culture renditions of this event that have pictures of suffragists chained to the White House fence, sure. demanding that he provide democracy at home.
But, Rebecca, it still took a couple of years before the amendment was passed and 4 years before the right to vote was achieved and acted upon.
That is correct. And one of the things I feel, Don, that is so important about this event and the events of 1917 is this particular event is not just an important milestone in St. Louis history and in women's suffrage history, but also in the history of nonviolent protest. Mm-hmm. In 1916, this was a nonviolent protest. They lined the streets. They wore simple sashes that said, "Votes for Women." The next year, after Woodrow Wilson was inaugurated again, Alice Paul in Washington, D.C., started the Silent Sentinels, which was banners in front of the White House. This is the first time that the White House had been picketed. And again, that was an entire nonviolent protest that predates Gandhi in India, that predates our own civil rights movement in the 50s and 60s. And for that reason, this is a tremendously significant event.
Well, had there been, this was an effort that had been going on for well over half a century and longer perhaps. Had there been violent protests prior?
Not to my knowledge in the United States. It started in 1848. Yeah. It took 72 long years. And when the movement kind of went into the doldrums until 1913, there were several women who had been to Great Britain. And in Great Britain, they became very frustrated and did turn to violence. three American women were over there and influenced by that, came back and said, we have to shake things up around here. But the way they did it was parades. And in one very historic parade in 1913, the day before Woodrow Wilson was inaugurated, thousands of women paraded down the streets in Washington, D.C. They actually upstaged Woodrow Wilson, and a riot started. There were many men that blocked it. 200 people went to the hospital. It was kind of a disaster, but it put the women's suffrage movement on the front pages. So I'm so grateful and proud of the American women for doing it the nonviolent way.
The Kathleen, let me come back to you on this. Why did it take so long in this country? If you look around the world, women had proceeded much more quickly in other countries than they did here. Why?
Well, I think that at various points in our history, for example, as we expanded and went westward, and as we industrialized and many people went to the cities, the people thought it was very important to preserve, quote-unquote, a domestic culture. Here we had lots of immigrants. We had lots of people who were from different walks of life. And I think that national leaders wanted to preserve the essence of a safe culture. And the heart of a safe culture is the home. Very interesting, in the 19th century, anti-suffrage demonstrators would appear on stages that looked like a Victorian living room, where the woman was the queen of the home, and talk about how important it was, how sacred it was, that if we were going to raise our children and build a country, and you have to remember we were a very young country, that the home was sacred, and that the woman could not go outside that domestic space if we were going to flourish as a culture.
And Rebecca, that is an attitude that has prevailed long after 1916. I mean, even to today, there are many, many politicians and many people think that a woman's place is in the home.
Well, I would disagree with that. I think there's a season for each task in life, and there may be a season for child rearing. But let's face it, women's life expectancy has greatly expanded, and your childbearing, child-raising years, even if you are someone who stays at home with the children, is basically only 20, 25 years. If you've got several children, you have a lot of adult time to make your impact on the world.
Oh, I'm not saying that that this shouldn't be. I'm just saying there are a lot of people who think as they did, 100 years ago.
Don, I also think that one of the biggest impacts of the women's suffrage movement and the feminist movement throughout the years is to say that everyone should be responsible for both the home and the world. Mm-hmm. So that there are many male feminists. And I think one of the big contributions that feminism has had is to tell both men and women that they're both responsible for raising children, for making a home, for making the world a better place. And women have always played an important role in the social welfare of their communities.
Sure. No, I understand that, and I'm not arguing against that. I'm just saying there is an attitude that has prevailed. I think of during the ERA debate, for instance, much of the debate was that women should stay in the home. Women should not be involved in the armed forces. I mean, this is something that has been ongoing. The attitude lasted amongst many people well beyond the period that we're talking about.
And every time we have a crisis, if you think about the 1950s and the early 1960s, when post-World War II, where women played a tremendous role, then the Cold War made us very insecure about our place in the world and our importance. We returned to that old order. And I think that we're seeing that again. As a matter of fact,
were there any notables involved from this area in the demonstration here in St. Louis in 1916? In other words, names that we might know? Do we have any sense of that?
We do not have a list of the actual names that were there on that date.
But Edna Gellhorn, who is very well known in St. Louis history, was one of the leaders of that demonstration.
Related to Martha Gellhorn?
That's correct. But yeah. Edna Gellhorn, who was born in 1878 and lived till 1970, was one of the leaders of those demonstrations. You may be familiar with her. She's played a tremendous part in St. Louis history. She became the head of the Missouri Suffrage Association. Mm-hmm. She became the vice president of the League of Women Voters. The League of Women Voters was founded here in St. Louis through her leadership. Mm-hmm. And she also, and many of the local suffragists in St. Louis, played a very important role in social welfare reform, along with African-American women who also were involved in social welfare reform. As a matter of fact, there was a very unusual partnership between African-American social welfare reform groups and suffragists, and then later the League of Women Voters, which was founded in 1920, to make this community a better place.
Was this woman, was she related to Martha Gellhorn, the journalist?
Yes.
And wife
yes,
of Ernest Hemingway?
Yes, she was.
What was the relationship?
You know what? They were cousins, as I think, but I'm not positive about that. So, but they were related. And as a matter of fact, Martha Gellhorn, there was a recent documentary film, quasi-fictional, that came out about that, talks about the influence of the suffragist community on her from St. Louis. And she was part of that family. She was... So I'm talking about Edna now. Mm-hmm. She was a leader of not only the League of Women Voters, but also she was in the early American Association of University Women. She was appointed to a number of city commissions. She was the force behind the first two women from St. Louis to be elected to the state legislature in 1922. Et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So these women went on to do their work for decades after this.
Rebecca, how do you think some of these women might be responding to what's going on in the national political scene now with regard to the candidacy of a woman, the first on a major ticket?
How do I think the women of today?
How do you the women of then?
Well, I can't speak for these, my great-grandmother in 1916, but I would say they would probably say, hey, it's about time. They were focused in this era. They wanted one simple demand, the vote. And it grew out of the need for education and for expanded roles in the professions. And I think they would be celebrating that we now have approximately 20% of the seats in Congress going to women, and that we have the potential for a female president.
And it still has taken a long time. I know that Abigail Adams, 200 mm-hmm. years ago, was telling her husband, don't forget the women when you write the Constitution.
Don't remember the ladies.
But they sort of did.
Well, it's interesting. In education, you know, I study Elizabeth Cady Stanton, who was the first to call for the right to vote in 1848. And in the early 19th century, women did not go to school, and there was absolutely no higher education for women. And it took a long, long time, and it was not until 1980 in this country when an equal number of men and women received bachelor's degrees. So it took an extremely long time for there to be educational parity.
And now there are more women enrolled in colleges and universities than there are men.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. But and we have women entering the professions at record sure. numbers, but we're still deficient in, I would say, three areas. One would be the CEO suites, also media, in management of media and running media, and the third would be represented in our governing bodies.
Hmm. Kathleen, to come back to you, the same question that I asked Rebecca with regard, you're a historian, and looking back on this, how do you think these women would be reacting to today's world, not only Hillary Clinton, but the things that Rebecca's just been talking about?
Well, I think that I'll be the cautionary voice here. I think they'd also be standing on the street corners demanding that young people and everyone register to vote and say, how dare you squander mm-hmm. this precious right that so many people over so long a time period have fought for. Just like the early civil rights leaders and the present civil rights leaders like John Lewis, who say, how can you not vote? And I think they'd be saying that. I think they'd also be saying, because this is a movement that took a very long time. Women had perseverance. They would also say, don't let down your guard, because women still don't have equal pay for equal work, for example, and that there are still problems that you must go out there and work on.
It is interesting to note that, again, to the national political campaign, how important all of the candidates, the importance all of the candidates are placing on the women's vote this year.
Right, they do. It was interesting after women got the vote nationwide in 1920 that both political parties tried to jockey for position for how they helped the women, because they were really courting their vote at that time. Oh, it was our party. No, it was our party that helped you guys.
Politicians, you got to love them.
You got to love them, yeah.
And it was also important because women did much of the work of political parties, mm-hmm. And had always done so, and they couldn't afford to give that up. I want to say just one quick thing, Don. The other reason... There are many reasons why we wanted to do this, and one of them was to celebrate this precious life, this precious right to vote. But the other thing is that we have an amendment on the November 8th ballot in Missouri, which does exactly the opposite. It's a photo voter ID measure, and it would be a huge step backward. And I think that these women, all of them, would be working hard to make sure that didn't pass. We ought not to be restricting the right to vote.
Well, it hasn't passed the legislature in any form that has held judicial scrutiny, but this is another attempt to do
that. This is another attempt.
Yeah. We have a caller who wants to get into the conversation. I have a couple of minutes left. Let's bring in Jean, calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Jean. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to make a little bit more of a contemporary observation. I was a young woman in the 1970s after kind of the start of the women's movement. And one of the things that more, my engagement with that, my awareness of that movement did for me was helped me build, it enabled me to build my sense of myself as an individual and did that really in a pretty rock solid way. As a female and as an individual, and as I look around at young women today who are my friends and my colleagues who are a little bit older than the age I was at that time, I think it's very important that there still needs to be, there needs to be some kind of a revival of a women's movement, a women's caucus. Those kinds of functions really serve an important purpose, because when you can talk among yourselves as women from your perspective and discuss the kinds of things that are specific concerns or specific issues to women, it doesn't take a very long time to cut through to the meat of what the next most important things are, which is how can we make a difference as human beings, as contributors to this society. But that women identified with women forum for communication, I think, is still really very important, and it is probably equally important across different economic lines and different professional specialties, and I would love to participate in that in an intergenerational way with today's young women.
Jean, thank you so much for the call.
I think the first thing you need to do is to come down on September 3rd at 10 o'clock with those women you want to participate with and be part of Celebrate the Vote, Jean.
Well, I would say the same.
Let's talk about that, because that's one of the reasons you're here, is the fact that this event is taking place. Tell us what exactly is going to be happening and who else is invited.
Well, we are going to have a Celebrate the Vote Festival down on the steps of the Central Library downtown in that little park across the street. And we are going to have a reenactment of that historic parade. So if you register for this event, and Don, this would look wonderful on you, you can have a replica of the historic sash that says Votes for Women. Uh-huh. Lots of people are going to come in traditional dress or white, and we're going to recreate that parade. We are going to have speakers who talk about the importance of this, and we're going to recognize women in the community who've achieved great success and that we respect for that. We're going to have music. We're going to have voter registration. We're going to have various nonprofit groups with specific information. Our co-sponsors include Webster University, the American Association of University Women, the Public Library of St. Louis, the Missouri Historical Society, the League of Women Voters, and other sponsors.
And Clark Fox Foundation.
Yes.
Right. The sash that you just showed there is a replica of what the ladies were wearing back in 1916. It is yellow or gold. Is that why this was called the Golden Lane, the event?
Yes, that is. They had golden sashes, mm-hmm. and they also had gold parasols. And that protected them from the St. Louis sun during the convention and standing out on the street. So we have ordered gold parasols. I think they're all sold out. And they say, my vote is my voice, and then the sashes. So that's part of it. And the suffrage movement had three distinct colors, white, purple, and gold. Purple was for justice, white was purity of purpose, and gold was for courage.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a very colorful day on the 3rd. That's Saturday, isn't it?
It's Saturday.
10 a.m. to 2.
10 to 2, okay, downtown.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being with us, Kathleen Farrell. Nice to see you. Thanks for the history lesson. Rebecca Now, great to see you. And we'll see what it's like on Saturday. I hope you have a great crowd.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.